Grace and peace to you from God our Father and from the Lord Jesus Christ. It has been a rough time of late for some of the rich and powerful of this world. Elon Musk says the past year has been the most difficult and painful of his career, as all does not seem to be well with Tesla Motors. In Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro has announced another raft of economic fixes centered on a massive devaluation of the currency to pull his country out of the misery that he and his predecessor have inflicted upon it. The International Monetary Fund projects that inflation will hit 1,000,000% there this year. In Turkey, President/aspiring dictator for life, Erdogan, has accused the United States of an attempted economic coup as the Turkish lira falls and the country slides toward recession. And I guess we will find out soon enough how things are with Paul Manafort and perhaps with the president. Now, I don't want to give the impression that things are harder for these people than for the actually poor. They generally aren't. And some of the problems we speak of, those in Venezuela and Turkey in particular, are much harder on the poor in those places than on the elites. However, these things are a reminder. Judgment comes to all, not just to those at the bottom. And even the lords of this earth and the billionaires of Silicon Valley can wilt under that relentless power. No one escapes. So far as I know, no one is taking bets on this, but if they did, I don't know what the odds would be that, say, Maduro escapes Venezuela before, well, what happens to him is the same as what happens to every dictator who proves weaker than the anger of the people. When he opened the sixth seal, I looked, and there came a great earthquake. The sun became black as sackcloth, the full moon became like blood, and the stars of the sky fell to the earth as the fig tree drops its winter fruit when shaken by a gale. The sky vanished like a scroll rolling itself up, and every mountain and island was removed from its place. Then the kings of the earth and the magnates and the generals and the rich and the powerful and everyone, slave and free, hid in the caves and among the rocks of the mountains, calling to the mountains and the rocks, "Fall on us and hide us from the face of the one seated on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of their wrath has come, and who is able to stand?" The first question we should ask about this reading is who he is that is opening these seals. If you were here last week, you heard Pastor Tasha preach, and so may remember the phrase, "Worthy is the Lamb who was slain." But worthy to do what exactly? This is from the start of Revelation chapter 5. "Then I saw in the right hand of him who sat on the throne a scroll with writing on both sides and sealed with seven seals. And I saw a mighty angel proclaiming in a loud voice, 'Who is worthy to break the seals and open the scroll?' But no one in heaven or on earth or under the earth could open the scroll or even look inside it. I wept and wept because no one was found who was worthy to open the scroll or look inside. Then one of the elders said to me, 'Do not weep. See, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has triumphed. He is able to open the scroll and its seven seals.'" That Lion of the tribe of Judah turns out to be a lamb, standing as if slain. Worthy is the Lamb. And the Lamb takes the scroll and opens its seals one by one. And here, perhaps, we would expect joy and peace and mercy to flow out. The good things that are attributed to the Lamb, power and wisdom and honor and glory and might. But it is not so. As the seals open, calamities are set loose upon the earth. conquest, war, judgment, death, and hell spill forth. The righteous die along with the unrighteous, and the only promise given to those slain because of the word of God is that still more brothers and sisters will die just as they have. And then the sixth seal opens, and creation itself begins to come undone, sort of like sheets falling from the roof of an old church. It isn't unusual for preachers to dismiss all of this, to ignore it. Many will say that God would not behave this way, that perhaps John is struggling to articulate some other important truth, but it can't quite mean what he's saying here. Surely Jesus, not our Jesus, not the kind Jesus we know, is not pouring out wrath upon the earth. So maybe this is a metaphor for political upheaval, for life under a hostile empire, but not God's own wrath poured out indiscriminately. Or failing to make that case, preachers and readers may conclude, and here I think it's at least in part to reassure themselves, we can't always be sure that there is no wrath, but perhaps we can come to terms with it, order it, compartmentalize it some way. That there must be a very good reason for all of this. And so, these preachers will attempt to perceive some order in the Lamb's wrath, some logic, some structure that can be followed, a law to it, some way that everyone who gets hurt deserves it and receives only in proportion to their deeds, so that it all works out fairly in the end according to a principle of justice that they may live and protect themselves by, that they may be found righteous. But the truth of this reading from Revelation, in fact, the truth of much of the book, is that the wrath of God is perfectly, inescapably real. And it makes no exceptions. It is not a fantasy of fire and brimstone preachers to keep ignorant churchgoers in line. And it is not the invention of wicked stepmothers to control unruly children. It does not respect wealth or power or social standing, not by exempting the rich and not by excusing the poor. It is simply true. Elon Musk feels it. He does not know it by that name, the wrath of God. He does not believe that that is what it is, but he feels it all the same. And that is the sure mark of something real. Whether I understand the force of gravity or not, whether I have words and equations to describe it, whatever opinion I might have on the matter, it holds me here in place while I speak to you. No matter what conspiracy theory Nicolas Maduro spins about his nation's economic collapse, no matter if he believes it, no matter even if part of it should be true, the reality is that the people of Venezuela are struggling just to buy staple foods with the worthless money that his government prints. That's the truth. The reality of the wrath of the Lamb is that it is there whether I believe it or not. And every effort of mine to wish it away is eventually revealed as so much folly. One of the hard lessons of being a pastor is that you cannot take away wrath by telling people that it isn't there. You're sorely tempted to do that because you hardly believe yourself that this is what is going on. But it won't work. It is, in fact, the spiritual equivalent of telling a person with severe depression, well, it's all in your head. It might be worse than that, actually, because in your head is still a real place. It is inconceivable to most Americans, blithely optimistic as we are, that we could suffer under something as alien and incomprehensible as God's wrath. And so we try to convince one another that all is truly at peace and no judgment is coming. We affirm and affirm and affirm, and yet every day we come under the most intense judgment, Christian and non-Christian, rich and poor alike. What do your neighbors think of you? How would they treat you if they knew what you really were like? What are you afraid of people realizing about you? What you don't say on Facebook, and you don't say at church, and you don't say to your spouse, and you hardly dare whisper to yourself or to God in the dark of the night. We live under constant judgment, to kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop, hide us from the face of the one seated on the throne. We live under judgment, but we deny that there is a judge. And then the visible tragedies begin, the things that we can't hide and can't deny, the failed marriages, the failed careers, the children who don't call, and the ones who only call when it's really bad. And the knees and the back reminding you that you will die. And through all of this, we pretend that we are not under judgment, that there is no wrath, that these are just things that happen. But this pretending does not rescue us. It does not end the wrath. Wrath never ends because we classified it as something else. John has a Dr. Seuss book, one of his favorites, called The Sneetches and Other Stories. We have read Sneetches so many times that we're one of you to split open my skull and go rummaging around inside, you would find the words and pictures of this book engraved just behind my eyes. And among the other stories in this collection is one called What Was I Scared Of? About a person who has a series of eerie encounters with a set of pale green pants that walk around with nobody inside them. And at one point, the narrator attempts to convince himself that he is not afraid. I said I do not fear those pants with nobody inside them. I said and said and said those words. I said them, but I lied them. Dr. Seuss is a lot of fun, and sometimes he's an effective moralist, but he rarely rises to the level of deep psychological insight. I think this verse is one of the best he ever wrote. The denial of wrath is a lie. It can only ever be a lie, because really it only even comes up when we feel ourselves already under judgment. Secure people are not afraid of being judged, but this generation lives in terror of judgment and then says, well, you know, it doesn't exist. I said and said and said those words. I said them, but I lied them. If that's the lie, what is the truth? Well, the scroll is the truth. What is in it is truth. And truth belongs to God and to the Lamb alone, so that only the Lamb can open it. And when he does, this world comes under judgment. No one escapes. The sky vanishes, and the people of this world, great and small, call on the mountains to fall on them, using the words of the ancient prophet Hosea, to hide them from that truth. But here is a mystery. Not everyone has to hide. The vision turns. The angels hold back destruction just for long enough to mark the servants of God, to seal them. Not to deliver them, mind you, not actually to rescue anybody. Some guardian angels these are. not to remove them away from the wrath to come, just to mark them and declare them in the midst of the coming destruction. And so the number is read out, 144,000, which is to say 12 tribes of Israel, 12,000 per tribe, the same number which is given as having walked out of Egypt on the day of the Exodus. It means the full number of Israel. All of God's people perfectly ordered in straight, even rows. So it seems to be exactly as we suspected if we granted the possibility of God's wrath, that it unfolds according to some precise, manageable rule, and the only question remaining is how to protect ourselves by making sure that we belong to that 144,000, or whatever number it is meant to represent, so that we are found blameless enough to stand in the middle of the wrath. Those who belong to the true Israel are in, and those who do not are out. And so the answer to endless wrath is to rationalize it, to compartmentalize it, to find that law by which God has ordered his people, and to live by it. But here, once again, we have a problem. Because attempting to assure myself that I am within that 144,000, within the number of God's sealed servants, within the law and righteous, actually looks an awful lot like what we meant by living under wrath. The fear of judgment still rules over everything. Life is still a kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. The experience of an Elon Musk striving for perfection and watching his world crumble around him as perfection eludes him. This is actually no different from the experience of a Christian who earnestly strives to be found among the righteous. And whether we speak of its secular or religious forms, and actually it's all religious, this leads to disappointment. And I don't mean that word lightly. This is a serious disappointment. We can find ourselves burned out, angry and bitter with God. This worthy lamb begins to strike us as even harder and less forgiving than his father on the throne. It is no wonder this passage is not read much in the church. Fall on us and hide us from the face of the one seated on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb, for the great day of their wrath has come, and who is able to stand? Nobody ever picks this as a confirmation verse. But the vision isn't over. John turns, and where he expects to see 144,000 in straight, even rows, Israelites all arranged by tribe, he does not. After this I looked, and there was a great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and languages, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, robed in white, with palm branches in their hands. They cried out in a loud voice, saying, "Salvation belongs to our God who is seated on the throne and to the Lamb." Salvation, not wrath. And who is this strange, motley assemblage of people, this jumble, this disorder? Where did they come from? John doesn't know. And then a mystery is whispered in his ear. These are they who have come out of the great ordeal. They have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. For this reason, they are before the throne of God and worship him day and night within his temple. And the one who is seated on the throne will shelter them. They will hunger no more and thirst no more. The sun will not strike them nor any scorching heat, for the Lamb at the center of the throne will be their shepherd, and he will guide them to springs of the water of life. and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. These are they who have come out of the great ordeal, a number beyond counting, beyond any order or rule or law, from every nation and tribe on earth. They didn't avoid judgment. They came through judgment, but not their own. Wrath has come to an end for them. Judgment has come to an end for them. God's own most holy law has come to an end for them, because they are washed in the blood of the Lamb who has suffered all judgment, all this world's sorrow, from beginning to end, and takes it as exclusively his own. Truth belongs to this Lamb alone, not to you or to me, not to the world, not even to the angels or to the law, just to him. What is in the scroll? Whose names are in the scroll is his business alone. And that is shocking to us. It comes to us as the most severe kind of judgment, a judgment that seems to exclude any ability of ours to impact the situation at all. And this strikes us as wrath beyond measure. And in one sense, it is. But now listen. Stop crying out to the mountains and hills to shield you from the one on the throne, and listen to him and to his Son. Worthy is Jesus, the Lamb who was slain, for everyone who hears his voice, everyone he washes in his blood, there is no more wrath. Judgment has come in him, and his judgment is for you. There is for you no more guessing about this. There is no other shoe waiting to drop. There is no more striving to shield yourself from him by way of an order which was never designed to protect you from that one. You, who are in the midst of the great ordeal, are no better than anyone else, no more worthy. But you are his, and your robes are washed white in his blood. And so the one on the throne will shield you, and the Lamb at the center of the throne will be your shepherd, and he will guide you to the springs of the water of life, and God will wipe away every tear from your eyes. Amen.